I want to put this in context of what we're going to be paying for electricity from these same folks who are getting the water licenses and building the power plants. And I want to explain how this is all being done under the government's plan. In 2006, the government announced it was doing what's called a tender call for new energy from the private sector. And this tender call initially was for 2,700 gigawatt hours of energy. And they anticipated the price might be around $60 a megawatt hour. As it turned out, this tender call, when the announcement was made on July 27th of this year, BC Hydro bought three times more volume than it said it was going to buy, three times more, about 7,100 gigawatt hours from the private sector, which is about 11% of what we use annually here in BC. It signed contracts. It's in the BC Utilities Commission is now in the final stages of approving all this. It signed contracts, most of which ran for close to 40 years. And the price that we're paying for this energy is $87.50 a megawatt hour. And I did a table, and I'll show you on the screen here in just a minute. But the price that we're paying is very high for this energy, and we're being locked into these contracts for 40 years, or up to 40 years, for this energy. And once this is a government-guaranteed arrangement, so the government is going to find it very difficult to walk away from any of this down the road. And you and I are going to be the ones who end up paying it. The contracts, by the way, are inflation-protected, so the developers have no risk in that regard either. And BC Hydro pays property taxes now on the plants that are built, these either run-of-the-river or small hydro plants that are being put, being built now. We even pay the taxes for them, the property taxes. So we're paying $87.50 a megawatt hour for this energy. The market price is currently in the range of $50. The market goes up and down. But what's really significant here is that in the submission that BC Hydro made to the Utilities Commission on August 31st of this year, when it put in its application for approval for all of this, they included a table, which I've got on the next slide, just leave it for now. And the table shows what the estimates are of future energy prices by various forecasting agencies. And probably the most important one is the one that's owned by the U.S. Department of Energy. It's called the U.S. Energy Information Administration facility. And they're saying that the price at the border, and projecting up for close to 20 years from now on, is going to be around $50. Now, we can argue whether that's a good or bad estimate, but that is their official estimate. And so we're paying $87.50 to buy energy from private power producers in BC when the estimates are that the price should be in more in the range of $50 if we went to buy it at market. So it's a huge premium over and above what arguably we should be paying. I should say one other thing, and I think this is important. In the 2004 submission that BC Hydro made for approval of its resource acquisition plan, as they call it, they had a little table there that was really interesting. That, and they haven't had it in more recent submissions. That table showed us the actual cost of them generating power from the major dams that we own in BC, the major projects that were built in the starting the late 60s right through to 1984. And that cost of energy for BC Hydro was $5.43 a megawatt hour. Now, there's a reason for that, and that is that we're paying 1975 prices because we own the energy and we're selling it to ourselves, and we've decided that's how we should do it. Now we're talking about $87.50 a megawatt hour for energy. I'm not arguing, by the way, that BC Hydro could now build energy at $5.43 an hour. That's not the case. But 30 years from now, or 40 years from now, if we build it publicly, we will still be paying the prices that it costs today. And with inflation, we can imagine that in 30 or 40 years, prices will be far, far higher. So we get price protection by doing it that way. Now, some of the contracts, as you'll see, don't expire until 2051. The other thing that's significant about this is that these contracts, the rate impact doesn't happen for 4 or 5 years. And so things look like they'll be okay for a while. And then in about 5 years' time, suddenly, as BC Hydro starts paying this very high price for the energy, you and I will see a huge jump in our rates. 8.1% is what they projected, just for that, just for this tender call. This is the table that Hydro submitted to the BCUC. And I don't know if you can follow the lines here, but this is supposed to be a red line here, is the estimate by the U.S. Department of Energy of electricity prices at the BC border. And you can see it's $50. And finally, it starts to creep up way out here around 2022 or 2023. But it never actually crosses this black line, which is what we are going to be paying, until you get out here to about 2031. That's a long ways into the future, and who knows what's going to happen in the energy business 25 years from now. So we are paying a price here, adjusted price, for the energy. When they're estimating at the border, it will be this price. That shows you the gap that exists in terms of how high the price is that we're going to be paying. Trafford? I just took the table that they had in their submission and added up the numbers. And this is a table that assumes that there'll be 30%, they use the term attrition, that is to say all the proponents who got contracts may not deliver all the energy because they have outages and maybe some of the facilities don't actually get built or whatever. And that's based on the experience in the past, but the past experience was that the price of energy that Hydro was paying was much lower, so my guess is 30% may be a high estimation of attrition. But nonetheless, if you add up this one tender call, the 2006 tender call, you're saying that we are now obligated to $15.6 billion in payments for energy purchases from private energy developers. And I just heard that there's a new 2007 tender call that's going out. So this is not the end of the process. This is just 1 year's tender call. It's a big one, admittedly. Now, go back. There was a freedom of information request by someone who was interested in what the obligations were that the government had with respect to sort of off-books contractual obligations. And the request was largely to look at what was going on in terms of, say, P3 hospitals and so on. But in the response back from the ministry, which came back on October 3rd, they included information about BC Hydro as well. And interestingly, the government itself has acknowledged that already there's $13.4 billion in contract obligations. Now, there's different ways to measure what the obligations are, depending on your assumptions in terms of whether it'll be 30% attrition or 25%. But they're saying already that it's $13.4 billion. And I have two tables here to show you to illustrate this. This is the table from the submission that was made to the Utilities Commission by BC Hydro. And it shows this one tender call, how much we're going to be paying every year for this energy. And the assumption is that it's going to be just under 5,000 megawatts of energy a year, or gigawatt hours rather, of energy a year that we're going to be buying most years up there. And the total amount we'll be paying is normally in the range of about anywhere from 400 to 500, I think that's the top of 520 million a year. That gives you the amounts each year during the contract that we're going to be paying for this energy. This second table here is just a copy of the letter or the table included in the letter that I mentioned earlier from the government with respect to the obligations that BC Hydro has. And these are energy purchase contracts, this line here. And you see this number here is $13,396,000,000. So however you cut it, it's a lot of money that we're on the hook for now. Okay, Trafford. Now, the thing that's also very perverse about this, I see I got 5 minutes, so I'll try and speak a bit more quickly. Very perverse is this, that what normally happens is that private developers, they get their water license on a nice site, or they get a dozen water licenses, whatever. Some of them have 7 or 8 licenses or more. So they get their license, and they do some basic surveying, and they wait. And they bid in based on their estimate of how much it will cost to build their project on the site, what the cost per megawatt hour will be, or gigawatt hour. And if BC Hydro selects them as one of the proponents that it wants to buy energy from during that tender call, then they get a sort of letter of understanding or commitment from BC Hydro that it will buy the energy at the price that's specified, $87.50 or whatever. They take that to the bank and say, look, we've got a guarantee of 40 years of public funding for our project. BC Hydro is going to pay, so please lend us the money so we can build it. So you and I, as members of the public, are actually financing these projects. That's what's going on. We are paying with a BC Hydro long-term energy supply contract. And then after the contract is over, what then happens is that the proponent, the private developer, owns the whole thing outright. And they're free then to sell that energy either to BC Hydro in competition with anybody else on the Pacific West Coast. It could be California. Hydro could be competing with California to buy the energy, and they can export it or find some other buyer. But we don't have any control over it. We certainly can't stop it being exported because the government has opened the grid to private energy exports. And this, let me make one other point there. If you look at the BC Hydro ads that are on the TV right now, they're talking about how what the government is doing is promoting energy security. But it's totally contradictory to say, on the one hand, all you private developers can export this energy, and we're opening the grid to facilitate it, that to happen, and say somehow that this is making our energy source in BC more secure. It was secure and is secure when we own our own energy through BC Hydro, and then we just sell it to ourselves. We don't have any issues about exporting it in that regard. But if somebody private owns it, how do we stop them from exporting it? So how is there any energy security from that? In terms of environmental impacts, one of the things that's significant here is that because there's so much money involved, when a proponent gets a water license and they get a contract from Hydro to build a project, they want it up and running as fast as possible. If you've got a project that's going to generate, say, $20 million a year, every month that it's delayed is, what, $1.6 million. So you're going to be pushing and pushing and pushing to get that project approved as fast as possible. And that's what's been happening around the province with these projects. Once they've got their hydro contract, away they go. Let's get things done. So in terms of the environmental planning, we have a system now in which individual developers who get a water license and a hydro commitment, energy purchase agreement, are trying to get their particular site approved regardless of what the overall impact would be in a river system or a valley. And they're all doing it quite independently. There's no coordination, no planning, just a lot of lobbying and pressure on municipal governments and local communities to accept that these projects are put in place. So there's, in terms of the environmental impact, they're not looking at the big picture. In terms of the actual assessment, they're just looking at individual projects. But if you have a dozen projects in a river valley, the cumulative impact of the dozen projects is what you really need to assess as well. And that's not how our system is working. It's looking at individual projects and whether or not they meet the relatively easy criteria that we now established for environmental approval. Bill 30 in the energy plan. A lot of communities, when they look at these projects, come to realize that there are very few benefits. They're capital intensive. You spend $50 million on a project, and once the construction phase is done, three jobs maybe for the community, that's it. And the project is getting a revenue stream of $10 or $15 million a year out of the community, but it's not, the money is not coming back to the community. At the same time, the community has to bear a lot of intrusion from these projects in terms of access roads and power lines and all of that, and may impede tourism, it may impede recreational use. We're talking about new private property, fences, things of that nature. So there's a lot of disruption in some communities as a result of the projects, but no benefit. Not surprisingly, some communities are resisting the pressure, hence Bill 30, to enable the government to override municipal objections to these power plants being approved and built. Okay, I said this already. So, energy security, I mentioned this. We can't stop them from exporting this energy. This is so the whole idea that there's some sort of self-sufficiency involved in this arrangement is nuts. Another thing that is happening is a lot of the projects are being flipped very quickly, so that as soon as the local proponent, where they've got their water license and got their contract with Hydro, as soon as they see that there's a lot of asset value that we've essentially given them, they sell part or all of that project to another larger energy company. And you see that if you're looking at the press releases of some of the companies that got the 2006 water license or hydro contracts, that they are taking in new partners. One, for example, Plutonic Power up in north of Powell River announced that GE Capital has just bought for $100 million 49% of that project. It's a lot of money. And that gives you a sense of the value of the project, which the public really didn't get. And the other thing is that there are NAFTA implications to all of this. There are investor rights under NAFTA. And so once you have foreign ownership of water licenses and projects, how does the government manage this in the context of these investors having enormous power to limit regulatory capacity of the government, to limit our ability to increase the water license fees and so on? A little lightness in the present. Anyway, let me try and wrap this up. What does it mean for us? We're going to pay more and more for our electricity. Our competitive advantage, which has been there for years, and is cheap electricity, and that's going to go out the door. We are being exposed to major price hikes, no question about that. We're getting no assets for the money that we're spending. We're getting no energy security, and we see these water licenses being bought by foreign interests in a lot of cases. So there's a lot more to be said, but this is, in a nutshell, what some of the problems are with the government's energy policy. And this is why I think there needs to be a really profound, important public debate about where we're going with all this. We can see the numbers. We can see how much it's going to cost. And my feeling is that that debate has not happened. People are unaware of the implications of what the government is doing. And if we don't have this debate soon, it'll be rather too late to stop some of these developments. So thank you very much for your time.